Hi, everybody, and thanks for joining our weekly podcast. I'm Robin Lewis, founder and CEO of The Robin Report, which, by the way, is much more than just a daily report. It really is a knowledge platform, and from which we communicate, you know, pretty heavy thought leadership stuff on various strategic topics throughout, yes, the daily reports, but also these podcasts that Shelley and I do, and webinars, and in the future, maybe some live events would be great. So today, along with our chief strategist, Shelley Cohan, who's also, by the way, a professor at FIT and Syracuse University, we welcome you to our weekly podcast, the topic of which is brand influencers and celebrities without guardrails. You know, Shelley, in all of the many years of mine in, you know, brand marketing and advertising back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, which I know dates me big time, but during all those years, before social media was even defined, and when there were three or four major TV channels and streaming, what was that, right?
That's right.
Yeah, all of this, well before the internet. You know, and it was the Mad Men, golden age of advertising. I think most people have seen that series on TV. And it actually, the world of advertising actually was like that. And I was in there with gray advertising and so forth. So anyway, but during that period when brands were built and grew with really great discipline, and always with attaching the brands in very positive ways to build and protect the image. And of course, the media platforms were minimal in numbers during that period. You know, For example, under VF Corporation, Wrangler Jeans, okay, spent millions of dollars supporting rodeos, and famously, Dale Earnhardt and his son in their spectacular winning streaks in NASCAR. And of course, there are many other examples that we could go into, but seldom, you know, were there any breaches of ethical or moral standards which would taint the brands to the point of consumers raging about it and the brands being forced to separate their brands from celebrity or influencer endorsers. But today, Shelley, as you know, it's madness running loose, right?
It's crazy.
I mean, seemingly no guardrails, really. And with literally thousands of media platforms to spread the nasty and sometimes vile things some of these brands are spewing forth. So, Shelley, it's a huge problem today. You know, I know you ran an article on this in Forbes. So can you expand on this a bit and start us off on this major issue?
Sure, Robin. I mean, good examples right out of the starting gate. Adidas said goodbye to Yeezy, the Yeezy brand. And Nike said so long to Kyrie Irving. You know, and yep. This is really sending out a clear message to future collaborators and also the industry to follow suit that zero tolerance for hate speech and hate actions. So, and I think our industry has really been evolving over the past few years to seriously take on this kind of stakeholder approach versus just shareholder approach to the business. And they're being held accountable to this by consumers, suppliers, employees, you know, really trying to act in the best interest of the business by making decisions based on the many, many entities that are really vested in the company, such right. as customers, suppliers, media, communities, and employees. And this shift from the short-term profit-driven to the long-term prosperity-driven is really growing among fashion brands.
Yeah, and it's also being pushed much more today by young people. Once again, they're a whole new generation, whole new culture that's coming in and will not, you know, kind of tolerate this kind of stuff. So, and, you know, Adidas is a great example, Shelley. They they had a lot of negative feedback about how long it took them to make a decision on letting Yi go. I think it was over 2 weeks.
Right.
Yes, you know, I know they had to consider the short and longer term impact on the finances, of course, of the company. And when all was said and done, the total loss over 2 years was around, unbelievable, $650 million. And I'm sure there were contractual things that they had to be, that had to be examined as well. But for me, it did seem as if they took way too long to make the right decision.
Yeah.
And by the way, Shelley, there's also a real seedy backstory on many other internal leadership behaviors in Rolling Stone. It goes beyond. Yeah, you got to read it if you haven't already. It goes beyond his horrible anti-Semitic rantings.
And by the way, Robin, this is just an observation I made, but perhaps the lack of diversity on the executive team at Adidas may hinder its ability to really act quickly on issues like this. The company has really strived to become more diverse and have a more diverse representation on the management team, but they sure have a long way to go. You know, diverse teams provide richer output, broader view on issues. In a case like this, it should really not be left up to one single person to make the decision. You know, companies should have, you know, code of conduct counsel or a process that really addresses infractions, you know, on that level, or policy violations like making anti-Semitic remarks. It's a conduct counsel or team that should be making very swift decisions. You know, the management team needs to figure out, you know, the go forward strategy. And the management team has to really consider how the conduct impacts the employees, the suppliers, and other stakeholders, all of whom may leave if no action is taken.
Yeah, you know, excuse me. The rise of social issues has grown since the pandemic, and many brands must evaluate, as you were saying, how they plan to address problems quickly that come up. Social media and access to information overload has created this instant message feed on the entire world happenings, right? I mean, the times have changed, so there needs to be a higher degree of readiness on the part of brands to really swiftly deal with issues. They should bring it down. These companies are under the microscope, you know, the social media lens. Shelley, the big star celebrity slash performers, athletes, partnership with these mega brands has, of course, been around for decades. What has changed, though, drastically, is the volume and velocity of information that is shared instantaneously, really around the globe. I mean, it's like thousands of media platforms on speed, 24/7. Nothing gets missed. I mean, total transparency.
Yeah, you know, our writer, Eric Weerson, also touched upon this topic. He wrote an article called The Future of Celebrity Influencers.
Right.
And as brands are trying to win over this young customer, that they're really tending towards influencers that are kind of more pop culture, like Snoop Dogg or Ryan Reynolds or 50 Cent or Kanye and Kyrie, of course. Mm. And these are people that are super connected on social media with tremendous followers. So yeah, Robin, you're right. The access of information and social media's impact on current social issues can really get heated up very quickly.
Yeah, certainly brands can have, you know, like morality clauses built into the contracts that you know, that then gives them the right to terminate a partnership based on behavior that negatively impacts the reputation of the brand. But what other solutions do you think should brands be considering?
Well, I mean, one of the issues with the Yi contract is how much money the company loses based on one brand leaving. You mentioned $650 million in a 2-year period. I think brands should be thoughtful about how much one brand impacts total revenue. You know, in other words, there shouldn't be one brand or supplier that dominates the merchandise assortment, because when things do go south, you need to have a replacement plan. Kyrie Irving at Nike, while a great brand fostering lots of sales, the loss of the Irving brand is not going to be detrimental to Nike.
Yeah, you know, a great example of a super brand that still has legs is the Michael Jordan brand.
Of course.
What, you know, yeah, really. I mean, but to this day, it represents around 11% of Nike's revenue. And this guy has been gone out of sports like 30 or 40 years ago. Anyway, 11% for Nike, it's very significant. So they continue putting a lot behind that brand.
It's a great example of a long-standing brand partnership where both parties are really vested in the relationship. I mean, that relationship is almost 40 years strong. And, you know, Nike deals with numerous basketball stars, so they kind of spread around the wealth a bit, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, on and on. So they're not really tied into one big deal. Adidas built an entire division inside the company, 100% dedicated to manufacturing and selling Yeezy merchandise. So I'm unsure how that's going to play out, or if that division's now going to have to shift into another product category.
You know, I go back to the fact that brands have to really be careful about who they are doing partnerships with. They have to know more about them, where they stand on social issues, maybe even their political views, which sometimes creeps into the, you know, the
It's true.
number of issues. So who knows what else? But they do need to be aware of the personal characteristics. And make sure that they align with the brand. Add in today's rapid fire social media world, the risks with these younger pop athletic icons is larger than ever, right, Shelley? So having an exit strategy is very important. When the relationship sours, most brands bounce back pretty quickly. And when you look at the number of endorsements compared to the few that really do go south, the numbers really are quite low.
Yeah, you're right, Robin. I mean, and some companies are even looking at virtual influencers. So, you know, these digitized avatars that represent a brand. Here are the top three virtual influencers. So the first one's Magalu. I know Magalu really well. I've done some work for the company Magazine Luiza, who's the largest Brazilian retailer. She, Magalu, the virtual influencer, is the top rated virtual influencer for 2023, and she's had the most visibility in the world. She has 14.6 million followers on Facebook, six million on Instagram, 2.6 million on YouTube, and over a million followers on TikTok and Twitter. And ironically, she also has a collaboration with Adidas. I just thought I'd mention that.
Incredible.
And then we have Little Nicola, who is number two ranked virtual influencer. It's a robot model who's worked with some of our top fashion brands like Prada, Dior, Calvin Klein. She also sings and she releases songs. So she has over 3.6 million TikTok followers and 3 million Instagram followers. And guess who's number three, Robin? It's actually someone you know well. She was born in 1959.
Oh, Shelley, keep dating me. I mean, I can't even remember that far back, but let's see. Born in 1959, it cannot be a virtual influencer from that long ago. Of course, they did not exist. But if I had to guess, the most influential woman at that time was Barbie.
That's right, Barbie. So Barbie actually has entered the world of virtual influencers, and she's actually ranked number three of virtual influencers. She has a very powerful social media presence. She has over 14 million fans on Facebook. She's got 102 point million followers on Instagram. And get this, Robin, this is crazy. She gets 440,000 monthly listeners on Spotify.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, there's over 18 billion minutes of Barbie user-generated content created every year. So
Unbelievable.
here's a fun fact. The first designer that had a collaboration with Barbie was the same designer who gave my commencement speech when I graduated FIT.
Really?
Oscar De La Renta did a collaboration with Barbie back in 1985. And it's interesting because Barbie speaks on social issues. For example, her Instagram post in support of Black Lives Matters movement received over 40,000 likes.
This is incredible. These numbers are incredible. I mean, and I understand that some of these influencers, very young people, are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. It's crazy. So, anyway, Shelley, do you think that consumers connect with these virtual people? They may not seem authentic. I mean, virtual influencers are. You know, they're also like a huge marketing push by the company since content is 100% driven by the brand.
True.
But on the other hand, the full control of what a virtual influencer says and does allows for making sure, you know, that there are not misalignments in action or behavior that obviously goes against the brand. The company can depict a lifestyle they want to project as a brand. In other words, you know, really being in full control of that. The downside, of course, is that the perfect influencer may also provide unrealistic standards that customers feel they have to live up to. Your friend Barbie may be at risk on this one, right?
Yeah, now that's true. I do think a big advantage of the virtual influencer is that, content can be just quickly updated, changed, used on social media in like milliseconds. So the response action time is very high. And in a recent survey, 58% of respondents were actually following a virtual influencer. So here's one more stat I gotta throw at you. This is kind of a crazy stat, but virtual influencers can offer nearly three times the engagement rate of a real live human influencer.
That's incredible. What a crazy world, you know. Shelley, I can see two major elements in this technology era. We're really now evolving through that may not invite bad behavior, but may very well condone it. And a megaphone of millions of platforms, you know, to send it around the globe instantaneously. I'm not going to get all political on you, Shelley, at this time, but think about this. Our nation's politics, unfortunately, has descended into a very dark place. Violent language and violence itself seems to have really no guardrail. So, do you think, is this a kind of negative leadership signaling that it's okay for the likes of Yi, for example?
Yeah, I mean, this whole situation with Yi and Kyrie, the bold move to walk away from them is really a step in the right direction to think more broadly about the impact of these celebrities and pop culture icons. Hate speech and actions by those in these prominent positions entice others to act similarly and give people the idea that these actions are actually acceptable in today's socioculture environment. When brands work swiftly and quickly to address these types of negative behaviors, it demonstrates that companies are really more invested in social responsibility. So I get it, Robin. Making profits is essential for business, Yeah. Profits should not come at the cost of turning a blind eye to these big social issues.
You got it. And let's be optimistic about it and hope that it will follow down the right path.
Yes. For our listeners, you can find more of our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Buzzsprout, and therobinreport.com. And look for us on YouTube, where we broadcast our podcast as well. And please follow us on social media, link in with us, and follow us on Twitter for the latest thoughts about the industry.
And I want to thank everybody again for joining us. And as I always request, if any of you have a topic that you've been thinking about that you would like Shelley and I to cover, please send me an email at robin@therobinreport.com. And thank you very much again.